the Spot Track Podcast, talking sports contracts, the salary cap, and business of sports.
Welcome into the latest edition of the Spot Track Podcast. Brandon Kravitz here, your host for the day, along with the money man himself, Mike Jannetty. Mike, a happy baseball season for you and to those who celebrate. It is a joyous time. Feels like every other week we've got something else to celebrate on the sports calendar, but today's a good one.
It is. My Mets are projected to have the highest tax payroll in history and are projected to finish fourth in the National League East. So I don't know what you want to say about that, but happy opening day.
Pretty standard year for the Mets is what it sounds like to me. I don't know what you're worried about.
I don't know if baseball had a dead cap term before this past offseason, but the Mets have finally created one, right? The NFL has bled into baseball because this is a dead cap purge year for the Mets. This is what it's going to be, and we have to take our medicine, I guess.
So I know you had your baseball preview episode earlier in the week. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that is there a bold prediction you want to reiterate before we officially get going, or anything that you learned about yourself through the art of discussion in that last episode?
How about I give you some raw nerdy numbers, because I think that's what a lot of people come here for, right? I'm about to launch the official opening day Major League Baseball financial piece that hopefully a bunch of you out there will read and kind of in conjunction with this podcast learn a little bit from. Free agency was good, not great. Do you think people think this was a good free agency, Brandon? Or do you think that the Ohtani and Yamamoto and all that stuff sort of masks the fact that, I mean, the Boris clients obviously are getting plenty of run here, but I think this should have easily been a $3 billion free agency, and it's not. And that's including the Ohtani Yamamoto contracts, which themselves are north of $1 billion. This is a $2.8 billion free agency. We had 3.2 million last year. We've been in the threes the majority of the non-COVID years, even in some of those years where we didn't have a Bryce Harper or an Ohtani or somebody like that. The sum of the parts got us to $3 billion. We're not there. And this is it. The deadline's in like 2 hours in terms of when I turn off the free agency window on Spot Track. It's a little surprising to me. And, you know, a lot of people are going to point to Montgomery and Snell and Bellinger and those Boris clients, and maybe rightfully so. But I just wonder what the average baseball fan thinks of the offseason if you can sort of exclude Ohtani from it.
Oh, it was incredibly top heavy, and that garnered so many headlines and so much of the attention. What the Dodgers did certainly stands up to a what we would call a good offseason in baseball. But
oh yeah,
it was so top heavy, and so many teams seemed to be in. It reminds me a little bit of when LeBron James became a free agent, and it was all about and Kevin Durant. Same thing happened with him. All these teams put themselves in position to get those guys, and the rest of the market is hurt because of it. We saw that a little bit with Aaron Rodgers when he was on his way out with the Packers as well. So those stars tend to create some really interesting top heavy headlines in free agency markets, but the rest of the market tends to be a little bit suppressed. I think that may be what we see here with if you take the Dodgers out of the equation, I don't know how you could call this a good offseason for baseball.
Yeah, not terrible, just sort of below average slightly. You know, if I start to do some accountability work, and I think I will to some degree, in terms of where, you know, the math says some of these contracts should be, most of these players are going to be well under value, well under fair market value in terms of what our math says. So just in that regard alone, I know we kind of fell short in a lot of areas. There were three teams. So this piece I put together is like nine different segments. It's not crazy long, so don't worry. It's not going to be a novel for you, but I do bring in like off-season total spending, because it's not just free agency, right? There's extensions, there's arbitration, there's a lot to it. It's a five-month marathon, quite frankly. We had three teams, including all that. Free agent signings, internal extensions, and all the arbitration work they had to do. We had three teams in the 20s over the last 5 months. Oakland, of course, brings up the rear. Nobody's going to lose that bet. How about if I tell you that the second lowest offseason spending team were the Minnesota Twins, who are -115 to win their division right now? If you're a Twins fan, are you good with that? Are you good with the fact that they basically are just saying we're going to run it back and hope that we've got enough steam to make it? Or do you think that they're falling short here?
They've kind of pushed the chips into the middle of the table in prior seasons to put themselves in a good position where I don't think they had to be as aggressive. And let's be honest, in that division, you don't really have to be. In the American League, maybe that's a different discussion, but perhaps they're a team that looks at where they're at come the trade deadline. But the Royals aren't there yet, at least we don't think. The Tigers are still bad. The Cleveland Guardians still trying to find their footing, and the White Sox aren't a threat either. So they didn't really have to do much in terms of just trying to make the postseason. And then I think they put themselves in position relative to their competition where they can reassess this in the middle of the year rather than having to go into that free agency spend. I am curious, though, when you crunch the numbers on all of this, how much of does the Juan Soto trade to the Yankees factor in? Because you were talking specifically about free agents. This was a trade deal, new contract. So how does that factor into all of this?
It does and it doesn't, right? So I can separate it for just free agency, which I've done initially there. That's that $2.8 billion I'm talking about. That's just 130 free agent contracts that were on the books this year. And then I break it out into a more encapsulating offseason picture, right? There were 87 trades, believe it or not, from November 1st to today. Four or five crazy impactful ones, right? Glasnow, Juan Soto, Corbin Burns, and then that late one, Dylan Cease, going to the Padres, kind of surprisingly. So we're taking it all into account here. The Yankees were right in the middle. It's kind of where we expected them to be. Maybe a touch under if you were considering them in on Snell and in on Bellinger, which were, I think, easily they were minus odd favorites to sign both of those players early in the winter, and it certainly didn't happen. So like I said, everybody just feels a touch under where we thought it was going to be, Dodgers notwithstanding, who blew everybody out of the water here.
Which is why when you talk about divisional odds, they stand atop the rest. You would have to lay $550 to win $100 to bet them prior That's to wild. The season starting. I don't know if I've ever seen that. I don't know if I've ever seen a divisional favorite that it has that's that heavily juiced in the odds market.
Are you confident that they're going to win the division?
Yeah.
That division is bonkersville. Jordan Montgomery coming to Arizona now. Dylan Cease coming to the Padres for no reason, right? Like, why is San Diego doing this? There's going to be a lot of back and forth. I don't think the Dodgers run away with this thing like those odds say they should.
Yeah, and that would be the fear. I would never bet it because it's just there's no actual value there. But sure. In terms of confidence and making a pick, I just don't know how you could look elsewhere. You're going to make me jump ahead in my notes here, so let's just go ahead and do that. I think this is the most stacked roster that we've seen in Major League Baseball since A-Rod and Derek Jeter were in their prime on the same roster. That's how I view where the Dodgers are right now. They have three players that are among the top of the, in terms of the shortest odds to win NL MVP.
Yeah.
And Ohtani is third, which is crazy. It's Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Shohei Ohtani. That doesn't even get in to the way that they've upgraded in terms of their rotation. Just locked up Will Smith. We'll talk about that in a bit as well. But I just don't see any holes. That's the thing. And you know, with their flexibility that you've detailed here on this podcast and on the website, the way that Shohei Ohtani's contract is structured, they can still be aggressive when they need to at the deadline. So I just don't see, they seem impenetrable to me unless they deal with major injuries.
Yeah. And obviously that's a part of a long season, but I'm not going to argue with you. They're at least top seven are unrivaled. And if you want to go back to those Yankees teams, I'm with you. Look, we saw a Phillies team kind of try to do this, right? Lack of depth, but man, can they go out and hit home runs? This team's going to do everything. This team's going to hit doubles, triples, homers. They're going to play small ball. It's so fascinating that Mookie Betts was a right fielder, become second baseman, become shortstop in the matter of basically 18 months for this organization. And nobody's really batting an eye at that because he's such a damn versatile freak that it's just going to work out. Will Smith has been batting cleanup for this team for 3 years, and everybody's just kind of been like avoiding it. And now look what's happened, right? They've they're not even sitting on the on their hands with that. You know what I mean? Most teams wouldn't even do Freddie Freeman, right? Oh, we've got Betts. There's no way we can do Freddie Freeman. Not only did they do Freeman and give him the extra year that the Braves wouldn't give him, they punted on last year, punted, right, 100 wins, in order to align themselves for Ohtani. And then after Ohtani, gave a catcher $140 million, right? It's you can't stop thinking about the move after move after move after move in comparison to what other franchises in this league just simply would never, never do. So I don't think it's reckless, but I'm going to reiterate this. I like what the Giants did a ton, like a ton. I love what Arizona is standing for. Now, can they repeat last year? No, but they've certainly added 2 to 3 pitchers to at least attempt to do this. So as good as this Dodgers team is, and as unbelievable as this franchise has been in doling out money, and certainly the Ohtani deferrals are a huge conversation here, I just wouldn't make them 5-1 over every other team in this division. I wouldn't. And by the way, that only makes me want to watch this division even more. So I'm going to be up late. I might be divorced by the middle of the season because I'm going to be up late trying to watch this division as much as possible.
Well, this podcast could really change in tenor and tone if we're going through all of that. So let's talk about these numbers then. The Dodgers spending spree continues within the last 24 hours. 10-year, $140 million deal for catcher Will Smith. He turns 29 to start this season, was set to hit free agency in the summer. So why now, given how much they've already thrown at these players, and do you like the deal?
Why now is an interesting question. He actually has 2 years of arbitration left, so they're doing this at the right time, right? The second you get into the walk year, so many of these agencies are saying, we're just not going to do this. We're not going to deal with this, right? Corey Seager did this to the Dodgers, and look what happened. I just think they couldn't risk it. They know how much value this guy brings as a catcher with this kind of ability at the plate. He's done it now for basically 3.5 straight seasons. So the resume is just too good to get into a situation where he and his agent look at the Dodgers and say, thanks, but no thanks. And I also just think this is Ohtani driven. The Ohtani deferrals have given the Dodgers the ability to make these kind of moves. So why not wait? Or why wait, right? I mean, we got a guy here who is wildly underpaid as the cleanup hitter around Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, and Shohei Ohtani. And if you want to throw Teoscar Hernandez in there as well, so be it. He was kind of like the odd man out, financially speaking. So now they've righted that ship. They've done so sort of in historic fashion. The $140 million, I think, is third in terms of catchers all time. And you know, the average salary is right up there as well. There's some deferrals built into this as well, Brandon. I think $50 million of the $140 is deferred. So in terms of tax salary, it's about 12 and change on the Dodgers payroll. So everybody's kind of playing ball with this roster. You can understand why they want to be major contenders for 3-4 seasons at least. And this just reiterates just how in this Dodgers organization is right now.
And when you have a good catcher in baseball, you don't let that guy go.
Yeah.
It's one of the tougher positions to nail down. And when you get it right, you can't be a great team in baseball without a really good, at least above average, somewhere between above average and great catcher. So I'm curious though on that front, because we do this when we talk NFL all the time, the state of the position, and we probably talk running back to a point of nausea for some people. But what about catchers in baseball? What's the state of that position? Because it is so important, but it's also one that takes a beating. So I'm sure that some of those numbers end up getting suppressed over time because of injury issues or the lack of longevity just by the nature of the position.
Yeah, it's going to be running back sort of aligned, where you're going to have a small tier at the top of that position that will be very, very well paid because they're kind of unicorns in that regard. And a lot of teams will consider this a revolving door type thing, a by committee for many seasons. You know, we'll buy a free agent every year. Houston's been doing that for forever. You know what I mean? That's just been the odd position out for them on a loaded roster otherwise. So it's going to be team by team, I think. But when you get a guy like this, and I know you're a Baltimore fan, when you get a guy like Rutschman, you're probably just not going to wait around. I would expect an Adley Rutschman contract by the end of the season. I really would. And it may mimic this Will Smith contract to a certain degree, even though it's 4 years.
It's got to be more than that.
Well, yes and no, right? Because you're buying out pre-arbitration, you're buying out 3 years of arbitration. So there's a bit of a sliding scale. And how much of free agency is a player like that going to want to forfeit for a Baltimore team that could be together now for 10 plus seasons for in a lot of cases? But it is a placeholder. You know, this is the kind of deal where other catchers around the league who are in this realm kind of look at it and say, all right, if the Dodgers are doing this, right, everybody else has to come in and at least this kind of template. So it's a trendsetter. We'll see what happens otherwise. But it is one of those positions we're monitoring. By the way, the institution of robo-umps and things like that are going to take away some of the skill sets, right? The ability, the framing and all that come with this position. So it's something to monitor, but you're right. If you've got a guy who can go out there and give you 130 games behind the plate, you're just going to have to pony up the money at some point in time.
Yeah, it's a feeling of safety that other positions just can't really offer up. When you look at some of the teams that, and I know we've got months to get to this point where we really need to put the pedal to the metal on this conversation, but the types of teams that you think are setting themselves up when the season starts to be aggressive when the time is right, trade deadline and things of that nature, how many teams are there of the 30 in Major League Baseball that are really going all in on winning right now?
Yeah, two separate points, I think, to be made there. In terms of the tax stuff, if we just want to go by that regard, I believe there's 9 tax teams right now in terms of our projections. I'm trying to find that on this piece as we speak. 9 tax teams. So that would be the teams that I'm identifying at least out of the gate as pretty much all in. You want to throw the Cubs and the Padres, who are pretty damn close to that first threshold, in there as well. I can tell you that we're at probably 11 teams who are at that tax point to where you're telling me they're all in. Then we get to this tier. We get to Arizona and St. Louis and, for some reason, Boston, even though everything seems to be burning with that team right now. The Angels, similar to Boston, right? And then Minnesota, who we just kind of referenced. Those are sort of that next tier of, they're right outside the tax threshold. They probably don't want to be tax teams this year, but if they're 15 games over 500 and have a chance to sneak into a one seed, could be crazy aggressive. Then you get into some really interesting teams. You mentioned Kansas City was sort of aggressive this offseason. We talked about them in the last pod as well. You know, they're 80 million clear of this tax threshold. If they're even sniffing a wild card, and they could be in a down division, look for them to be one of those teams that sort of out of nowhere starts bulking up for the July 30th deadline. Milwaukee, similar. Seattle, very similar. I'd expect Seattle to be aggressive, even if they're not really in contention in 2024. Maybe they're thinking about 2025 come June, July. So those are the fringe teams that I'm looking at. But for now, you know, we've got 9, 10, 11 teams aggressively all in just to start opening day. And whether or not that changes remains to be seen. But that's a really nice number to be at, where we used to be at 3 to 4, and I was begging MLB teams to start spending money because it was kind of a joke.
All right, last thing on this, because I'm curious where Cincinnati, you didn't mention the Reds, where they fall into this mix. Right now, the third shortest odds to win their division, and I think that's probably a really good bet because they've got a lot of talent, and I could see them as one of those teams, but I'm not sure, this is why we depend on you, where they are in terms of that sort of progression, or could a hot start ramp that up? Ellie De La Cruz was a revelation. They found some good pitching last year as well. They're young, so they're not there yet, but we would have had that same conversation about Arizona a year ago, and look how their season turned out. So I don't think we can write off a team just because they're young. Where do they fit into this conversation?
Yeah, so this is the value tier, right? The one you and I love talking about kind of every month or so. This is where Tampa Bay falls, the Reds. I think we can throw Detroit in this conversation. That feels like they're a year away from being a year away and may start to ramp up. And certainly Baltimore, who currently holds the 29th ranked tax payroll in terms of our projections. And you have to feel like they're going to be aggressive. So Cincy, Baltimore, for sure. Tampa Bay and Detroit probably, and maybe even Cleveland, who are down in that bottom tier of tax payroll. who, if they're sniffing that wild card, could become crazy active June, July.
All right, let's turn to the NBA. An interesting night last night for yours truly. I was I was at the newly named Kia Center for Magic Warriors, and it was exactly 3 minutes and 36 seconds into the game, and Draymond Green said, "I'm tired of playing basketball tonight." Second night of a back-to-back for them, and he was ejected for the 21st time in his career. Would not stop jawing at a referee. It looks like he's back to his old ways. Remind me on the financial side, if you get booted from a game that's only 3 minutes in, do you get to keep your game check?
Yeah, but you lose 3,000 per tech. So that's six. And you get jabbed for 8,000 for the ejection. So out of the gate, he lost $14,000 yesterday. So I don't know if you had a dinner reservation or whatever the hell was going on there, but it's just piling up. If you want something to do during lunch today, go to SpotTrack, bring up Draymond Green, and click on the fines and suspensions tab. It's going to take you a minute. You're going to get a little tired scrolling down, but it is absolutely fascinating. I'm not joking when I tell you how deep and how long this list is. There's a fighting, there's a kicking, there's just so many things now attached to this guy's resume, along with all those rings and accolades. But it's just the latest, you know, and it was only a matter of time, right? It's kind of a ticking time bomb with this guy. You know, it's gonna boil over at some point. I thought Steph's reaction yesterday was very interesting.
Yeah,
it does seem like most of the crew around him are at wit's end with this kind of stuff. And, you know, it's not like it's not an important game or anything, right? They're just on the fringe of being a playing team, and every single game matters. So I imagine you enjoyed yourself, even though the Magic didn't pull it out.
I was very entertaining. We actually had what I would call the full Warriors experience last night. You had Draymond Green getting ejected, and then Steph Curry hitting a step back three and then doing the night-night celebration down the Magic sideline. And I thought, this is it. And it was Paolo Banchero bobblehead night. So you didn't get the win, but you pretty much got everything else as a fan in the building last night. And yeah, you're right. I'm on that page. That is pretty crazy. $4 million in fines over the course of his career is what it details there.
It's hard to do.
He's found a way. And he doesn't even hold the record. The most ejections in NBA history, the number is 29, and it is held by Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah, I think I would have guessed that, actually. Yeah. Those are some good years, some good 90s basketball years.
Yeah, I didn't want to put you on the spot. Sometimes it can be tough to snatch those names. But yeah, that one definitely checks out with him. And Draymond Green grew up as a fan of those Pistons teams. So
Detroit guy, yeah, heck yeah.
Yeah. So you see where he gets it from. Jadeveon Clowney appears to be ending his career. At least I'm saying that this will be the end at this point. But where it all started, in the Carolinas. So what do you make about this deal? What are we looking at in terms of the contract details for Jadeveon Clowney, and why Carolina?
Yeah, he gets a healthy 2 for 20, at least initially reported. And it sounds like it can max out at 24 with some sack incentives. That's big, and that's the kind of number that Carolina's got to throw out there to get anybody to come there. I disagree with you in that regard. This feels like a contract that starts with Carolina and ends up elsewhere when he's traded, you know, because Carolina's made a lot of noise this offseason that really isn't going to matter too much in terms of the wins, at least how I see it right now, unless Bryce Young really takes 3 or 4 steps this season. But I like the fit. I like what they're doing. They're certainly building out the trenches in Carolina. That's how you have to get it done. I'm not going to say it's not going to work, but I have a feeling, and we'll see what kind of structure this thing comes with soon. I have a feeling this could be a trade candidate contract come, well, later now, right? End of November, early December.
Yeah, that's right. They pushed it back a week at the owners' meetings. 31 years old he is right now. Going back, he grew up in Rock Hill, South Carolina. It just feels like a farewell tour at this stage in his career. But overall, have we given Carolina enough love for what they've done to bolster their very bare roster?
No, they're doing a good job of this. They really are. Now, you know, the Deontay Johnson acquisition, that's kind of weird. I would have gone young rookie pick there, but clearly I can tell you right now, this is what they're doing. They're spending as much money as humanly possible on the trenches, and they're going to draft as much as humanly possible on the trenches, because that's the only way that you can build this thing is inside out, and they know it. So I get what they're doing. I like what they're doing. We'll see if this coaching staff can kind of make some magic over the next year or two. But I just don't think this is going to be one of those things where it goes from zero to 100 in 2024. And unfortunately, this is such an on-demand, you know, what have you done for me lately type thing, that Robert Hunt's $63 million guaranteed is going to become, you know, a sticking point for a lot of fans when they're 4-13 or whatever it's going to be for the upcoming season.
Yeah, their new head coach, Dave Canales, has one job and one job only. Fix Bryce Young. Fix Bryce. And you know what? He has done a hell of a job. He's built quite the resume for himself the last couple of seasons, getting Geno Smith and Baker Mayfield paid. So that guy, I don't even think wins and losses matter this year. That is how his job will be judged, is how those guys look. Real quick, before we get to our quick hits to wrap up today's episode, what's the holdup on Justin Simmons, Odell Beckham Jr., some of those top remaining free agents? We still have some interesting names out there. So where are we at timeline-wise?
Yeah, there's a bunch of safeties still kind of milling around. And I know there's some draft picks offsetting that conversation in terms of money. So my guess would just be money. Beckham's probably looking for $12 million plus. Simmons is probably looking for $10 to $12 million per year on a multi-year guarantee. And teams at this point, I know we're just 2 weeks out, which is crazy. But this is the point now where teams are looking for value. They're not looking for overpays. So it's a bit of a cat and mouse game back and forth. And I do think somebody like Simmons should be on a roster shortly. And I would expect it to not be a one-year showcase contract, right? That guy is worth the contract he had in Denver and then some, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, there's always one really good player that kind of hangs out there much longer than we expected. He's definitely that guy. Let's get to today's quick hits to wrap up the episode. Jim Harbaugh was really gassing up the offensive line position at the owners' meetings. Everyone's got them taking a wide receiver. It's a wide receiver heavy draft. And even if you wanted to go tight end, well, there's a great one there too in Brock Bowers. Do the Chargers have to take a skill position player here at five because of how bare that portion of their roster is?
He better take a tackle. If he doesn't take the first tackle off the board, he is doing this wrong. We know who this guy is. Okay. If any other coach or even any other assistant coach or any other front office executive is in front of a microphone telling us something like this, I wouldn't believe it for a second. I believe Jim Harbaugh. I think he loves telling us exactly what he's thinking. This is exactly what he should be doing. Why would we be having this conversation about Bryce Young, but not Justin Herbert, right? Herbert needs time. The second he gets injured, he becomes a 40% worse quarterback, right? He tries to play through it. He can't do it. He just can't do it in some instances. Justin Herbert should be a good enough quarterback to not need top flight $30 million weapons. He just should be. That is the talent that he possesses. So you want to tell me that they're going to kind of Kansas City Chief their weapon set for the next couple of years in order to bolster their trenches? That's exactly how this thing should play out. And if Jim Harbaugh wants to run the ball, it's even more reason to bolster an offensive line. So I believe him. I think they're going to take the top tackle off the board, whether that's at number five or whether they move back and try to chess, not checkers, this thing a little bit. It remains to be seen. But I don't think they're in on Brock Bowers or any of these wide receivers. I really do think that it is about not fixing Justin Herbert, but elevating Justin Herbert's ability for 17 weeks by making sure that they have a conscious, healthy, deep offensive line for the next 5 to 8 years.
Yeah, we all focus on the first round, but as the great Mel Kiper says, there's more than one round in the NFL draft.
Right, and if it's a deep wide receiver class, why do we need to take the number five overall pick? We shouldn't have to do that.
Right, although those guys do look pretty good. Dusty May is leaving FAU to coach Michigan. 5-year deal, $3.75 million per season. I believe that's middle of the pack inside of the Big Ten. I mean, going to be at least one of the highest paid coaches in that conference. Is that a smart move for Dusty May? Strike while the iron is hot. Even though he waited a year, he probably could have got at least the same deal a year ago, if not more.
Yeah, it's certainly big shoes to fill, right? This has been a contention team now for 3 years, and I'm not sure they're going to be that right now as they transition, but I don't know. I know you're an FAU guy being local there, but I don't know that anybody says no to Michigan, even if the price tag isn't, you know, a third of what Jim Harbaugh was making there. The ceiling financially and the ceiling in terms of being able to get to the FBS and the CFP and all that just seems so much easier and certainly more regular, more annual at a place like Michigan. So it's probably bad timing, right? Trying to fill those shoes and everything that's gone down at Michigan. And I know, by the way, there may be some sanctions coming down as well that he has to deal with, but I don't think I'm saying no to that contract.
My high school was right around the corner from FAU. Not exactly an athletic powerhouse, but it's a beautiful area in Boca Raton, Florida, if you ever want to visit. So I would suggest that. Let's wrap with this World Series prediction. Where are you at? Has it changed in the last couple of days?
No, you're going to love it because I know where you reside. I'm taking the Braves over the Rays, Brandon. I think the Rays shocked the world. That was my prediction
a year ago. You're just a year late.
Yeah, I think the Rays shocked the world. I think they know exactly what they've done in terms of moving on from Glasnow and bringing in. I mean, Pepiot's already in the starting lineup. There's so many moves that we know are coming organizationally from the bottom up that end up becoming phenomenal. There's that third baseman, one of the top prospects in baseball, Junior Caminero, that I think, I don't know, could be the next Corbin Carroll type player. There's so much writing on the wall stuff. They develop so well, and they love bringing on somebody else's trash, right? They don't want to pay $25 million for a full season, but they'll pay $12 at the deadline. And all they have to do is bring three or four of those contracts in, and a nice-looking team becomes a great-looking team. And great-looking team plus analytics plus depth generally gets you to the finish line. So I think it's time for them to raise some eyebrows, and we'll be talking about their 92, 93 wins in a division where I think they're slated to win to be fourth right now, right? Which is crazy.
That's correct. Yeah, that would be the ratings on that World Series would be awful everywhere but where we live in the Southeast.
Yeah, I'm not thinking big business here at all.
It's not the Braves' fault, I'll tell you that. I'll go Dodgers, Orioles. The opposite ends of the spectrum, the young up and coming team and the team that's paying for the championship this year. So a little chalky, but
what's the best one for baseball?
Oh, I think mine has to be the baseball ones.
Do you think Baltimore?
I think Baltimore, because Baltimore is them and the Diamondbacks are the two most fun young teams in baseball that have stars that they can market, and in markets that are smaller where baseball can go, look, these guys can compete too. But you have to have the balance of power in that sort of matchup. And the Dodgers, come on. I mean, it speaks for itself, having Ohtani and having the Dodgers brand in the World Series. So I think that sort of yin and yang kind of matchup would be absolutely perfect for what baseball wants.
I think 9 out of the last 10 years, I'm right with you. I think baseball desperately needs this to be Dodgers Yankees. I just do.
I mean, that's never a bad idea for.
No, I mean,
have we ever
Soto
seen that World
and
Series
Judge,
in our lifetime?
I don't think I have. No, I don't think so. I do think now, especially with this Ohtani news, which could linger and linger and linger, right? I do think that would be the most polarizing, star-studded East Coast, West Coast, right? This is one of those years where I think I'm rooting for that. Because I just want baseball to do better, right? ESPN's about to drop baseball. Did you see that? So,
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. So the league as itself just needs a victory, and that would be the easiest way to get one.
That's the opposite of the Rays Braves problem.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
A Dodgers Yankees World Series. Check me out on Twitter at Brandon Kravitz. And if you're looking for any sort of podcast assist or audio production of any kind, I can be your guy. AuthenticAudioPro.com for a lot more details on that. Hit rate, subscribe to this podcast right here, and make sure you visit SpotTrack.com for all of the latest. A brand new baseball article. Is that right, Mike?
Coming right now. Thank you, sir.
All right. Always a pleasure. We'll do it again next week.